Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast, on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Welcome, folks. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio Broadcast, RTR Truth Media, rtrtruthmedia.com. I am here with Jake Morfonios of Blackstone Intelligence. I feel grateful to be able to walk with folks like this and share and spread the truth with them. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be with you again.
Yeah, your awesome trip there to Palestine. I'm sure that you experienced quite a bit. I've seen a lot of your video content. I imagine there's still probably more to come.
A lot more.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to start this out primarily as a conservative Christian myself who doesn't hate anyone. Of course, we're always used that the trick of anti-Semitism is used against us because we oppose what's going on in Israel, what's going on in Palestine. And as a conservative, it's difficult. I find it difficult to try and support movements. For instance, I boycott. I won't purchase any Israeli products. And I agree with boycotting something that you think is fundamentally wrong. However, I have also noticed that among these groups, and this is how they have us kind of split Hegelian in a Hegelian fashion, is mostly led by leftist groups, it almost puts conservatives in the position where if a leftist is supporting this, then I can't support this. And the insanity here is that most of the people on the left are kind of Marxist based, right? And Israel itself was founded by Bolsheviks. I think that that's very interesting. I mean, I call it, with conservatives who support Israel, political schizophrenia. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tribalism. It's a tribal mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably the best hashtag I could give it. Because, for instance, look at the Bundy Ranch. I stood at the Bundy Ranch defending them against what I believed was a wrongful totalitarian attempt to steal their land. Right?
Yeah.
So as a conservative, which brought me to that issue, I was impassioned for that issue. I then turn around and applying that equal logic, that moral tenet of the preservation of, thou shalt not steal. And I look at what's going on in Palestine. I saw, olive farmers trying to harvest their olives and being prevented from doing so. I've seen people who have, their caloric content limited, certain products that can't get to them, checkpoints to prevent people from being able to get to hospitals and to schools. Can you tell us what you saw in Palestine yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started out interested in the Israeli-Palestinian issue back in the 1990s. After I had been a missionary for a couple of years in Southeast Asia, I came home and because I was fresh off of a church mission, I was asked to start teaching a high school level Old Testament course. It was every day before school. We'd get up early in the morning. I'd go teach the course. So I really started loving reading the Old Testament. And as I did, I saw, all right, we've got the modern state of Israel today. And I would look back in the Bible and see the corollary. And initially, I was what you might call a Christian Zionist. Not so much, I wasn't deep into it, but I had this general sense that the modern state of Israel is the fulfillment of all of these promises by God, and that we are blessed if we support Israel because God, that's his people.
Ah, yes, you know, Schofieldism. Yes.
Very, very typical way of seeing it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I continued researching, studying, and as I got beyond the platitudes and the niceties of the propaganda and started looking deeply at what happens in Israel on a daily life, and I had, after 9/11, like a lot of people, I had some measure of bias against Muslims. I openly admit to that. You know, I didn't like them. I had the sense that, you know, Muslims attacked us on 9/11 and they're cheering it. And, yeah. You know, what good can come out of the Muslim world? I was very much a typical Fox News type. I wasn't neoconservative because I was very anti-war, but I had, you know, I soaked up the propaganda at first.
You were neocon-ish libertarian.
I was libertarian neocon.
Well, we all were right. At one point. I mean, I had to wake up from that too. So I don't.
Now, you know. It didn't take long though for me after 9/11, because I was doing a heavy amount of research. My goal was to get as much information as I could about, you know, what the Al Qaeda network was doing, where they might have terrorist cells inside the United States, and gather as much information as I could, turn it over to whether it was the FBI or, you know, this newly created Department of Homeland Security. Mm. I wanted to do my civic duty as a patriotic American.
Yes.
And this is before I knew.
If you see something, say something.
That was the idea. I had not yet, but 9/11 was my red pill. 9/11 is what took me from being this, big into the left-right paradigm, Republican yeah. versus Democrat. If it's a Republican thing, I'm all for it. If it's a Democrat thing, automatically, I don't even need to hear what it is. It's evil. Now, while I continue to pretty much think that.
Yeah, me too. Me too, for the most part.
For the most part, I can.
Yeah, but not either one of these groups cannot be wrong all of the time. Now, I will say, though, that a lot of the times I find leftists being correct, they're correct in their point, but for all the wrong reasons.
Exactly. Kind of. Yeah. So as I did the research, Tom, and I got into it, I started looking. Immediately after 9/11, Benjamin Netanyahu, who was not the prime minister at that time of Israel, but he was a prominent Israeli politician, and he came and he visited the U.S. Senate, spoke to the U.S. Congress. Yeah. After 9/11, Iraq is building not just weapons of mass destruction, but nuclear weapons, and they are going to destroy you if you don't go take them out fast. Get rid of Saddam. Go Iraq war. So I'm listening to this, and I figure, well, he's got to have some evidence to back this up. And as time goes on, not only did I realize, wait a second, the Israeli Mossad played a role in 9/11, but Netanyahu had an agenda, and that agenda happened to match up with the geopolitical agenda of very prominent neocons in the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. And I started to see, wait a second, it's almost like the United States government is acting as the attack dogs for the Zionists in Israel. And I had to be introspective and start looking at it. Mm-hmm. And so ever since that time, I have continued to look at things and try and be open-minded, look at both sides, to the point that what this finally culminated as was my opportunity. I was invited to travel to Palestine, the Palestinian territories. Mm-hmm. So I visited Jerusalem and places in Israel. I visited the West Bank and places there. And I was able to see and confirm with my own eyes much of what I've been writing about for a while now. And that is, there is a system of apartheid in Israel. There is a system of abject racism toward the Palestinian people that should just wrench the conscience of any God-fearing Christian. Because say what you will about the state of Israel and so forth, it all comes down for me to this. God cares about how we treat each other.
Yep.
Set aside all of the, you know, yep. how you want to interpret promises to Abraham and the covenant people and all that. God still cares about how we treat each other. And that was the primary message that Jesus was teaching to the Pharisees of his time, which was, you know, you keep saying that you are the descendants of Abraham, but what matters is what is in your hearts and how you treat others.
Yes.
Treat people with kindness the way you want to be treated and so forth. So when I was over there in Israel and in the Palestinian territories, I saw a kind of supremacist mentality by a lot of the Israelis toward the Palestinians mm-hmm. that was jaw-dropping. The checkpoints, everywhere you go, the Israelis, they scoot on by. Doesn't matter. No concerns whatsoever. But if someone looks Arab and they're coming along, they're stopped. They check them. They hold them. They detain them. They can't drive on a lot of the same roads. They can't purchase the same things. If you are an Israeli living along the Mediterranean coast, for example, in Tel Aviv, you can go surfing all you want to. I saw Israelis out there surfing. You go a little bit further south into Gaza, it's against the law to own a surfboard.
What?
Arabs in the Arab Palestinians are not allowed to surf. And so from top to bottom.
Now, I knew things were bad, but this is the first I'm hearing of things like that. I mean, that's crazy.
It's incredible. So, for example, Gaza is supposed to be its own territory, you know, part of the Palestinian territories. But Israel monitors everything. And so, for example, today there was a Palestinian fisherman.
Yes, I heard.
Who went out further than 1 mile. This is just. He should be able to go wherever he wants to out there, but he went further than a 1 mile mark. And so
this was a recently passed law. I don't even know if the guy knew about the,
right.
So yeah. Okay.
Well, they killed him.
And they killed him.
He was a fisherman. From everything that I've heard, because of the amount of fishing that already goes on, because they are confined into a fairly small area, you have to go further out to get fish. I don't mean like an individual in a little rowboat. I mean a guy going out to try and catch fish, bring it in to sell at the market to support his family.
Right.
But they don't want that. There's all kinds of candy and chocolate and things like that that you were not allowed to own in or sell in Gaza. Because as you said earlier, Israel has calculated the number of calories that, and this has come out in government documents proving this, Israel has calculated how many calories they can allow the Palestinians in Gaza to consume that keeps them alive, but in a constant state of discomfort, to where they're not getting full meals and so forth. And so anything, because they don't want to allow the Palestinians there to eat any more than what's necessary to keep them from experiencing mass rapid starvation. Something like chocolate, oh, that's empty calories. You don't need that. That's not necessary to keep you alive, so it's banned. And if you try and cross into Egypt or anywhere else to get some of this, you know, horrible contraband, they kill you. Or you know, if you don't get killed, if you're lucky, you just get taken off to prison without trial, held where you never get to face any formal accusations. You get tortured, you get beaten. And maybe one day you'll get released.
Or run over by a bulldozer.
Right, like Rachel Corrie.
Yeah, you know, this is part of – I was having a discussion with someone the other day speaking about this left-right divide, and I brought up Rachel Corrie. And this is somebody from Texas who is pretty, you know, conservative and kind of brainwashed with the Bush mentality. And I brought up Rachel Corrie and said, oh, that crazy leftist – she probably had it coming to her. I literally had to throw my headset off and take a walk for about 15 minutes outside. I was so, so angry. I don't care what somebody's political ideology is.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you have the right to run them over with a bulldozer.
Right.
Just, I mean, the mentality of some, this is what disturbs me, and this is why I'm really trying to make it an emphasis, a point, to reach out to my fellow conservatives and say, look, I don't hate Jews. I don't hate people. As a matter of fact, I think that the actual Israeli citizen has no greater friend than us, because what we're trying to tell them is if you keep this insanity up, eventually it's going to lead to your destruction. At some point, they're so afraid of anybody allegedly having nuclear weapons. Why are they so afraid? If you weren't such a pariah, if you didn't treat people so inhumanely, you wouldn't have to worry about these things, let alone the fact that they stole them from the United States. And, good God.
Yeah. What a lot of people don't understand when they're new to this issue, or they hear folks like us talking about it, mm-hmm. Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is you hate Jews, you're anti-Semitic because you're criticizing. And I can understand why some people, our media certainly conditions the public to think that any criticism of Israel is the same thing as hating Jews. But that's the moral equivalent of saying, if you opposed Barack Obama on anything, you are racist toward blacks.
They tried that.
And it worked. It didn't turn into this huge thing.
Not as bad.
Because if you make it the equivalent in many countries in the world, especially in Europe, it is against the law to criticize the Israeli government or the policies of the government. So can you imagine here in the United States that if you said, you know, I really think Obamacare is socialized medicine and I don't agree with that. Oh, so you are engaging in hate speech against blacks. All right, well, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
I mean, that is literally how this is working. When you criticize Israeli policies, they conflate it with hatred toward Jews and they put you in jail. And this is happening a lot.
Now,
and I fear, and the reason, Tom, that I think we have to address it, despite, you know, we catch a lot of flack for this,
mm-hmm.
but this is on the horizon here in the United States. It's already starting. They're going after people in social media like crazy now, kicking people off. The social media has become the public square. This is the place where we engage in commerce and communication and so forth. And if you are prohibited from being able to participate in that because you have an opinion on Israeli policies that contradicts...
Yeah, my main channel was terminated, and one of the reasons why I'm struggling so hard right now is because I had taken 6 years to build that up. It wasn't huge, but it was it was bringing in revenue, and I wasn't getting rich on it, but it was paying for itself plus some, and I had some diehard supporters. Well, when I ended up visiting with the Club Fed for a year over the whole Bundy Oregon standoff thing, but as soon as I got I was able to, I started producing content again, and they did in January the 3-2-1 half an hour, your channel's gone, everything's gone. And and it took me this channel that I'm using now is an archive channel. And this is why I have to, like, you know, I have to ask people like you, like, you know, when we do these things, can you perhaps consider posting them on your channel? Because let people know, I'm not one of those folks that say that, oh, Jews rape babies out in the middle of a lagoon somewhere. I have friends. My co-host for 6 years was he was Christian, but he was Jewish. He was converted. I interview Jews all the time. Rachel Tobias came on my show. I met her in the High Impact Flicks. Brian Young met him in the Discord chat room there. Very, very awesome, amazing, intelligent Jewish girl who came from an Orthodox Jewish family. She has issues with the faith. There are supremacist aspects to Talmudic interpretation. Some people take it with a grain of salt and kind of reject that, but the Likudniks and folks like that, they take it to the umpteenth degree. She got sick with all of that, but she's a Jewish girl, culturally Jewish, from a Jewish family, and one of the nicest people I ever talked to. Beautiful, intelligent, these are the type of people we need to be holding up. So when we go out there and we see these other people with the juju, look, I have a serious problem with political Zionism, and I also have a fundamental problem with Talmudic Orthodox, you know, what I call the Pharisaic kind of interpretation of the faith. I also, but I take the time to go and I read from the Jewish Encyclopedia, and even the Jewish Encyclopedia says that the modern day manifestation of Judaism bears little resemblance to the faith of the Israelites. So I have some problems with Talmudism, but those are theological discussions that can be had. But right now, whether it be those, because a lot of these folks in Israel are atheistic communists, Bolsheviks, as far as I'm concerned, they've rejected the faith. So they're not even acting on Talmud. They're using that tribal mentality, and they're using the religious people as a stepping stone to achieving a greater agenda. Now, some people say, well, what came first? And it doesn't really matter. The fact of the matter is that I know Jews in this country who, you know, when I shared with them certain Talmudic verses that I really kind of bothered me, like the ones about Jesus. I read Jesus in the Talmud, which is a book written by a Jewish scholar. And he said, I didn't do this to really drive a wedge in between Christians and Jews. He said, I just did it to be honest. And so I started talking with some of my Jewish friends about this, and they had no idea that these verses even existed. And they were repulsed by them. So, I, you know, if anything, even, you know, even Jews can fall back to and reject the oral traditions. I know constitutional, conservative, anti-Zionist Jews who reject the Talmud, and amen. You know, if you're not going to allow your religion to make you believe that you can, like Jesus said to the Pharisees, vaguely, I'm probably going to misquote this a little bit, but you honor the letter of the law, but you violate the heart of the law with the oral traditions, is what he was talking about, how they wrote a bunch of exceptions around the main rules. Thou shalt not murder. Oh, but you can go off into another town and you can, as long as it's not somebody from the tribe. You can do no. That's not what it says. Thou shalt not murder. I wanted to clarify that with folks, because you know I have friends right now that I'm kind of butt heads with over this issue, because they feel as I do that they don't like what they see going on there, but they cling to their faith. But faith it can be interpreted in layers and levels, and I don't want to blast on people for their religion. I'm a Christian because I happen to think that Christianity, do I think it's true? Yes, I think it's true. But I also know that Jesus, he didn't come to be a peacemaker, but he did not come to be a warmonger either. It's a touchy subject. Because I see folks out there blasting. There are things that need to be criticized in the Talmud. There are things that need to be criticized about political Zionism, and you know there are many Christian sects, alleged Christian sects like the Catholic Church. I'm an equal opportunity criticizer, right? And I know you are too, right? Yeah. So the Vatican, huge problems, huge. Huge problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're running a thing tonight on the show, Walter Veith, which is he's a pretty hardcore Protestant, on the Jesuits, right? Mm-hmm. Jesuits have been a problem. Our founding fathers talked about them. They were worried about that, you know? So anyway, for those out there, I know that, sometimes we kind of focus on Israel in this matter, and I want to explain why I do that, and for the audience out there to understand, I do that because it's the one area really, truly, that is being censored to the point where if we don't push back, it's gonna the wall is gonna close just like it did in other countries in Europe, and they're gonna pass those laws, and this thing with the Pittsburgh synagogue shooter. I have some serious issues with that whole event. I'm not saying that it didn't happen. I'm not going down that road. What I'm saying is, though, that individual, something isn't right. The ADL is a criminal organization that has an agenda. They have a criminal history. Meyer Lansky, don't need to really go much further than that, okay?
Yeah.
You know the history of it. I don't, as many lies that these hardcore extremist Zionists have been caught in, the Liberty, the Levon affair, I mean, we could go on. The list is thick, and it's public, of how many lies and false flag terror events they have achieved, they've done to try and achieve their agenda. I look at something like Pittsburgh, a lot of the statements that, and I'm going to call him a psychopath because, of course, I renounce anything that he did violently, but some of the statements that he was making, Jake, were right. He wasn't wrong about some of the statements, but what they did was rather than castigate him for the horrible crime of murder, which is, that's the crime, they attack his message. And I find as soon as that happens, that my little red flag goes up and I go, wait a minute. This guy, if he was really true to the cause, he wasn't stupid. I've read some of the stuff that he put out. He wasn't an idiot. He was a psychopath, but he wasn't an idiot. He had to have known he wasn't doing any favor for truth by doing this. So
yeah, that's the first thing I was on my way back from Palestine. I had just landed in, I had checked the news while I was sitting on the plane in Tel Aviv. When I landed in Newark, first thing I did as I was getting off the plane was I just scrolling through messages and checking the news, and that shooting had just happened during the flight.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing that I thought was, poor people that were shot.
Absolutely.
Second thing I thought was, I don't know who this guy is or what his background is, but he has done damage to all of us, not just the people that he shot, because whatever he is saying out there, if there is anything that is legitimate, it doesn't matter. We're all going to be wrapped up and held accountable.
Right.
For what this idiot did.
Yep.
And so for me, it's I try to explain it by talking about what Zionism is, and people know in general. But let me explain why I have the concerns that I do. Pew Research, which is one of the biggest research polling companies in the world,
mm-hmm.
Maybe the biggest. They've done extensive studies, and what they have found is that 91% of Orthodox Jews support political Zionism. 88% of conservative Jews, which is the next kind of demographic, 88% of conservative Jews are Zionists. 70% of Reform Jews, which is kind of the most liberal of the religious groups, mm-hmm. Of the factions,
yeah.
They are Zionists. And then in the United States, 99% of all United States Jews express a deep commitment to Zionism.
Yeah, it's so, by design. Yeah.
So when I look here, the reason that this matters to us as American citizens is, it's to me, it's not about Judaism. It's not about – what matters is that Zionism is a geopolitical philosophy,
mm-hmm.
that puts the welfare – of the state of Israel ahead of all other political considerations. So my concern is not about the Jewish race, Jewish religion. It's about nationalistic loyalty. So when we look at the fact that here in the United States, less than 2% of the population in America is Jewish, but then you look at the grossly disproportionate number of dual Israeli citizens who are in positions of authority and power in the U.S. government. Donald Trump's administration is brimming with Israeli citizens, dual citizens. They have citizenship in both U.S. and Israel.
Yep.
When you have people who have a very, very deep commitment to the political agenda of a foreign country and they have a grossly disproportionate representation in our government. Mm-hmm. And that results in things like the bizarre choice to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, which carries with it immense, immense repercussions.
Who needs Russian collusion?
Yeah, right. So to me, if it was any other group, you'd say the Chinese or Russians or Indians or Pakistanis, if we had, say, 1.5% of the U.S. population was Pakistani, and the vast majority, 99%
of American Pakistanis
have Pakistani citizenship, and they make up a very large percentage of our government, and they are doing things using U.S. tax dollars that benefit Pakistan, I would have a problem with that. I guess most Pakistanis are Muslim. It's not about their religion.
No, it's about their
nationalistic loyalty.
Nationalistic loyalty, right, absolutely. And American Jews, here's the thing with that. They're raised, and there's millions and millions of dollars put into these I was listening to a rabbi give a talk, and this rabbi had it. He'd had it with the whole Holocaust. He said, Israel has turned the Holocaust into God. Okay? I'm not here to deny or confirm or anything about the Holocaust, but to make this one point, this one main point that he said that I agree with. He said, before, Jews used to build temples. They used to build synagogues. They used to worship God. Now they build temples to death. The Holocaust itself has become their God. And it's become an industry of propaganda. And I'm not saying, the war was horrible, but history is written by the winners, right? We don't hear about the millions of people that were killed by the Bolsheviks. And what gave Hitler that opportunity to rise to power, right? If the Bolsheviks were not doing what they had been doing, I dare say there would not have ever been a need, or not even a need. That's not a right way to put it. I think you understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
There wouldn't have been that opportunity for a totalitarian regime to rise up to try and save the day, because it's like government creates the problem and then offers the solution. I look at Nazi Germany being very similar to that. The problem that was created was allowed. It was allowed to fester in Germany for decades, and the takeover of the banking industry and the history of it. And I'm no fan of any form of, I'm a completely limited government constitutional conservative. So, when people call folks like us and they turn around, it's either anti-Semite or it's Nazi. Well, you call me a Nazi is kind of ridiculous because I don't believe in a big government. I don't believe in it. Fundamentally, they're dangerous and they're responsible for more deaths in our lifetime. And who knows? Democide is the major leading killer aside from natural causes. So as far as I'm concerned, that's not the answer. But we don't hear about the Red Terror, the Bolsheviks, and I know that a lot of people, Jake, don't you know you're a Russian bot? I hear that all the time, but like you and I are diehard anti-communists and Russia is not beyond critique. It's not beyond criticism. I have to be honest. I don't know your feelings about this. Maybe you can share it with us, but I don't trust Putin. He's ex-KGB. I mean, it's just kind of like looking at Bush, who was ex-CIA. They're huge, huge government figureheads. I don't trust any of them, really, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, I see the connections between Israel, Russia, China. There have been some folks that have presented some pretty compelling information on that. I wish we could all, as people who oppose Zionism, not fight with each other, and we could probably share that information better. But what do you think? What is your position on where Russia, China, and Israel kind of I don't know. It's troubling what I've seen about that. What are your thoughts?
A lot of people swung the pendulum swings back and forth with public opinion when the United States under the Obama administration, when you've got Hillary Clinton and then John Kerry, secretaries of state, combined with neocons like John McCain, with the complicity and support of Barack Obama, mm-hmm. pushing war in Syria, mm-hmm. it is natural that people on the right would say what they're pushing, especially those of us who are more libertarian minded and believe in limited, you know, we don't believe in entangling alliances or right. intervention in other countries. It is natural to say we oppose that. But there was great fear that the U.S. Administration was going to, through the proxies on the ground, ISIS and the others, was going to be able to topple the Assad regime. So we cheered when Vladimir Putin stepped in and said, guess what? I'll nuke you. I'll nuke you if you come in here and invade. And that made Obama step back. And so, you know, we're like, good job. We all were very glad to see.
Yes. I agree.
Get put in his place. And this continued it. And I was very grateful to see what Russia was doing in Syria. And Vladimir Putin, I have some admiration for him. He is a brilliant man. I would not be surprised if he is legitimately a genius. He has got a very sharp strategic mind.
I'm sure.
What happens, though, is that in this support for what Russia was doing to defend Syria, a lot of people have jumped on to this idea that Russia, these are the good guys. That's just not the case. Russia is, they're not the good guys. They are just like the United States. It's whoever's in power.
Amen.
The people of Russia, I am sure they're as good as any other people on earth.
I have a lot of friends there, and they're awesome folks. Yes.
Their political class is also connected to Russian oligarchs. Many of them are Jewish oligarchs.
Yep.
But there is a lot of political corruption there. Vladimir Putin is holding some of it in check. However, he's also complicit in some of it. And Putin is now in his last term. What I'm worried about with Russia is not what's going to happen while he's there. It's what is going to happen
when he
he's gone. Who is going to rise to power? Because there are some terrifying people in Russia who could instantly turn around and change from having this kind of...
Maybe the plan. That may be the plan.
That could be it. So I am one who I'm glad for Vladimir Putin's work in Syria, although when you really get down to it, what it comes down to is he, the United States, and Israel, some other parties, basically had some backroom deals to divide up the country. And who's going to get what and how it's going to work.
Yes.
And so that to me, I can't cheer for. Right. So there really are no heroes there. It's just a bunch of different mafia heads sitting down at the, you know, in the dark room saying, we're having some trouble here. Let's decide who's going to do what so that we don't kill each other.
We were kind of warned about this kind of thing. I mean, look, a lot of people think that the Cold War ended. And I want to, again, like you said, I want to make clear, my issue is not with the Russian people. No more is it with the American people. No more is it really with the people in the Middle East. I don't have... These governments have become, I mean, look, the Cold War, we heard from Yuri Brezhmanov. You remember Yuri Brezhmanov, who spoke of the deliberate agenda to infiltrate our universities with Marxist ideology? And we've seen that all happen. And we're seeing now the collapse of what I call common sense. We're seeing the collapse of these kids and like you have Bill Ayers and Josephine Dorn and these, they're college professors. They're teaching our kids These are people that blew up police stations and yeah. You know, they're teaching our kids. So I see that a lot of the things that Yuri Bresmenov was talking about have come to pass. And what concerns me with Putin is, like, I also agree, he's extremely intelligent. And he's done a lot of things, and it gives me pause. When I say, attaboy, for a politician, I often have to go, okay, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I know how they do things that it's just like, remember Michael Corleone in The Godfather? Every time I get out, they pull me back in. It's like, you know, they mentally pull you back in by doing things that, like kicking Obama in the ass. I loved it. It was great. But then I turned around and I went, wait a minute. I don't know. Call me skeptical. Maybe I'm a cynic. But, you know, I'm really concerned because look at the United States. It's become a hotbed of Marxism. Where did this come from? You know, what did the first prime minister, of Israel say? He didn't say, I'm a proud Israelite. He didn't say, I'm a proud Jew. I am a Bolshevik.
I'm a proud Bolshevik.
That's what he said, David Ben-Gurion. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I try and tell people this, especially conservatives who support the state of Israel. When I explain to them, I have won more hearts and minds over with that one factoid than all of the USS Liberty videos and all of that other kind of information. Yeah. They're like, what did he say? Wait a minute. Because a lot of conservatives I know claim to be anti-communist. Well, how can you be anti-communist and support a nation that was founded by Bolsheviks?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Political schizophrenia. That's what I should probably title this video. It's political schizophrenia.
Political schizophrenia. Well, our founding fathers warned us to avoid entangling political alliances with other countries. The reason, though, for that, or one reason, is because the enemies of those nations that we form alliances with, the enemies of those nations will automatically turn their animosities toward us as well. So we instantly create more enemies, not that we've done anything to that third party, but because we have allied connected ourselves to them politically or militarily. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Israel, Israel acknowledges this. There is no nation out of the hundreds of countries on the planet, there is no nation that is as universally despised in the world as the state of Israel. It's not just the Arab countries. We may not see that here in the United States because the Western media really pushes how great Israel is. But outside of the United States, people don't like Israel. No. So I just think that... if nobody likes Israel out there, and we are their number one ally, and we're the ones giving them the weapons to be able to perpetuate all this trouble, then we are breeding a lot of hatred. Geopolitical enemies out there.
Ron Paul warned us about that.
He did, and they called him an anti-Semite over it.
Yep.
You speak out; it's nothing new. You speak out against Israel and they call you an anti-Semite because it works. It's a trick. It's a trick, but it works. Anyone who wants to see it, just a day or two ago, I put up a video on my YouTube channel with a former Mossad agent as well as the former Minister of Education from Israel. Yep. Both of them. It, just real quick video. Go watch it. It's youtube.com. Oh, well, this is going to be on my channel, but YouTube.
It's on mine too. This is the interesting part about that, right? Right before you put that video out, I had done a video where I fused that clip into the video, right? And then I turned around and I saw on your channel that you had shared that video. So I was like, you know what? I hope you don't mind. I know that you don't. But I mirrored that video from your channel as a standalone. You know, because that's one of those things that I look at as – that needs to be spread out into everywhere, to every corner, every channel, everything. And of course, one of your very impassioned fans and followers said to me, you know, you really should give Jake Morfonio's credit for posting his work. And I'm like, I think Jake knows what I'm doing.
Like, I'm not the one who was there recording that footage anyway.
I know, so it's Democracy Now, right?
It's just I snatched it from whoever I got it from. I got it off of Vimeo or somewhere,
right? But and that's the point. Like, I tell people, and I don't know if you get a chance to, I don't know if you're going to upload this on your channel or not, but for your listeners, anything on my channel that they want to use, I'm speaking for myself, anything on my channel that they want to use, they want to reproduce, I'm not in this for the money. I'm not in this for the for myself. I'm in this to share the truth, to share the information. I'm a Christian. I believe in Christian principles. And I believe in as a Christian conservative, I believe in freeing Palestine. And, and I think that message is more important than any one individual. And which is why I'm glad to have an opportunity to sit down and have, this dialogue with you, because you do have a considerable audience, and there have been a lot of us, and I'm just one of probably thousands that have been censored, but we weren't big enough, really to fight back against it. I put in all the appeals that I liked, and it was just ignored. But you know, if you can articulate a position that opposes Zionism without hatred in your heart, with love for your fellow man, then, in my opinion, we need to be holding each other up and trying to help that message spread out, as best as we can. You know, I talked to a Palestinian Christian, just the other day, who will be watching this. He's looking forward to it. He's somebody that shares information with you regularly that you sometimes use, but without naming his name because he wants to stay, you know, a little bit discreet. I'd like to give him a shout out and thank him and thank all of the individuals out there that send me, information and send you information. Keep sending it. It's just so needed. These people binding together now. And there's such love in these communities. There's such a good spirit. Just it warms my heart to see, even out of the most evil of situations, how much good that can really come from that. No, and you know, you know that we're all being censored pretty badly. I share on our website, rtrtruthmedia.com, I had your Twitter feed. I was just telling you before the show, I had your Twitter feed with, you know, just about your last five tweets or whatever it was set to, right? I go to check out what the latest tweets were. I go to my own website because I kind of, I kind of take a whole bunch of different information. I have all different links to it. So I kind of use that as I go there first and check the different channels and stuff. So I go to the section to check out your tweets, and all it says is Blackstone Intelligence Twitter, and then there's nothing. I checked the HTML code. It's still there, not working. So I had to go back, create the new embed, grab the HTML code again, go back to the website, plant it in. And I said, you know what? Now I'll print 20 of his tweets or 50 of his tweets in a row. See how they like that. But it's like these little technical glitches. I don't agree. I don't think that they're just natural glitches.
No. I hear from so many people every single day. Every day I hear from multiple people who tell me stories like that. Someone earlier today, who I won't mention her name, but she's actually also a somewhat prominent YouTuber, who has been trying to email me for two or three days now, and every single one gets rejected. It sends it back to her. Mm-hmm. And I hear that from a lot of people. Some people will have sent me screenshots of what they get when they try and send me an email. It will tell them, for security purposes, your email will be held for a certain number of days or something before it'll be delivered to the recipient. I'm like,
what?
Okay.
It's an email. It's not the technical drawings of a nuclear power plant. It's an email. But to them, ooh, man, the truth, I tell you, I am going to predict that we're going to see And I think this is unfortunate. I don't agree with it. I think we're going to see more attacks, or at least the appearance of attacks, coming against Jews in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I hate to say this, but I think that probably they're not going to be authentic. Call me cynical, call me skeptical, but when I say not authentic, I don't mean that they won't happen, and I don't mean that real people won't get hurt. But we had talked back in January. I told you about the Devil's Breath, which Vice did a special on. They went down, and I had talked to the reporter of Vice at the Bundy Ranch before they ended up going down to South America and talked to them about the Brumundanga. This was right after Jared and Amanda Miller assassinated people and were just, and then they tried tying them to the Bundys, which of course they were kicked out of the Bundy Ranch, because I sat across the table from Jared Miller, and I was, at that time, I was the base medic. I was volunteering as the base medic. I was a fireman, first responder. So that's what I was doing. And I sat across from, one of my friends walked over and said, "You need to check that guy out." I'm sitting across the table from this guy. I'm looking at his eyes. His pupils are fixed and dilated. There's obviously something serious going on. He looked like he was tripping on acid is what he looked like. He wasn't making a lot of sense, but he wasn't completely incapacitated. There were some real problems. So I took that to, I believe it was Jerry DeLumis or somebody, one of the folks there at the militia camp. And he and his wife were escorted off. They were actually disarmed and escorted off out of the area and to a motel. They didn't have any money. They didn't have, certainly didn't have the money for ammunition. And they didn't have ammunition and a whole bunch of firearms when they were there. They all of a sudden show up in Las Vegas, Nevada with a ton of ammunition. And you and I both know how much just a box of 9mm shells cost. It's not cheap. These folks didn't have a nickel. They were put in the hotel very nicely by some people that decided that, you know, they didn't want to just turn them out into the street. Right? Mm-hmm. So when I fall back to the Devil's Breath and things like it, I use that as an example, but it's certainly by far not the only chemical that that intelligence agencies, and by the way, I'm not going to say it's all government, special interest groups, mafias, criminal organizations have used to drug people, and the Vice special showed how prostitutes would give this drug to their target, and then they would have them, they would take them to the ATM and tell them to empty out their bank account. One individual they took to his apartment, and he had a security guy at the door. He went in, he woke up the next morning not having any memory of what happened the night before. All of his stuff, his furniture, everything is gone. He goes down to the security guard and he says to him, What happened? Why did you let people clean me out? And he said, "Well, you told us it was okay." He had no memory of this, right? So what I'm saying is, you know, after the Aurora, Colorado shooting, I called the police department. I asked him, "Have you tested this kid for scopolamine? Have you tested him for any other psychoactive chemical or agent?" Or nothing. I've looked at the autopsy reports from some of these individuals who have ended up dead at the scene, these shooters. Never. They're never tested. As far as I'm concerned, how can you be an investigative agency, a law enforcement agency, that claims to have thoroughly investigated one of these shootings and not at least considered every angle? And I'm not saying that the government is necessarily the one involved. You could have, I mean, there are some, look, Larry Grathwall, he did a video where he exposed the Weather Underground, and he said, "I was sitting in a room with PhDs, with people, professionals from academia, you know, about 20 or 30 of them, and they were plotting the communistic takeover of the United States and how they were going to carve it up, and that people would need to be re-educated, and there would need to be re-education centers built in the Southwest. And then he turned to them and he said, "What about those diehard counter-revolutionaries?" That's, by the way, me and you, Jake. Counter-revolutionaries or patriots or diehard capitalists that won't conform. And without batting an eyelash, these people said, I'll just have to be eliminated.
Yeah.
They were talking about 25 million people, Jay. So you cannot tell me that if people like the Weather Underground exist, if they're so determined that they will bomb, murder, and you know, casually plot the death of, say, 25 million counter-revolutionaries, you cannot tell me that to push a gun control narrative or agenda, because that's the, these groups, these far leftist groups are pushing, you cannot tell me that these diehards would not resort to the same tactics that some intelligence agencies and criminal organizations have used to achieve these agendas. Also, the point that I'm trying to make is Pittsburgh with this nutcase, or Aurora, Colorado, or this guy that just this shooting at Borderline, that Brian Young of High Impact Flicks did a kind of analysis on that. The only video we have shows a completely clean bar. There is not a drink spilled on the dance floor. It's a shiny dance floor. There's nothing knocked over but two bar stools. There's no music playing, and there's gunshots going off. And we're supposed to eat that video as, yeah, this is what happened with 200 people. I was a bouncer at a bar, right? And there were shots out in the parking lot. And only half of the bar emptied out. There were drinks all over the place. I mean, when you hear gunshots, you drop, you don't, oh, let me hold on to my rum and coke as I run out the door. It's just not realistic, right? So there's problems. Right. I'm not saying, again, not saying that the sheriff didn't get killed, not saying that nobody died, that's what they take this to whenever you criticize something like this. Oh, you just think that the whole thing is fake. No, but I'm not so naive to think that all of these incidences that we're seeing are authentic and as reported. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're setting aside the what we know is obvious. So some false flag attacks, some people end up just bearing the brunt of either the false flag itself or the resulting just dummies out there that jump on board. Mm-hmm. You can have someone who goes out and falsely, for example, pretends to be either an anti-Semite or someone who falsely pretends to be anti-Muslim.
Yes.
And you know, fakes it and gets the hornet's nest all riled up, and then they sit back and watch while people out there who probably had the good sense not to say anything or do anything themselves, they feel emboldened by this.
Yeah.
And so they go out and they can be manipulated into doing something. You look at what the FBI does, how I mean, this is their whole industry. Their primary model is to take people and agitate them and get them thinking they're doing a good thing.
Create terrorists.
Exactly. There's no, if you're not doing anything bad, we'll find a way of getting you to do something bad, and then we'll bust you for the very thing that we just got you to do.
Yeah.
And so the FBI, they take advantage of people who are either have had prison sentences. They'll give them early parole in exchange for going out doing gang stalking or some other operation or something. So they take advantage of people that are in situations that where they're vulnerable to influence, mm-hmm. or they'll do it covertly mm-hmm. through proxies to manipulate people into doing something stupid. You see, for example, some of the white nationalist type rallies where there are legitimate concerns about the erosion of Western European values and culture in the United States.
Sure.
But then you have an element out there that can be stirred up into becoming a little more radicalized than they ought to.
Little fascistic.
Yeah. And then what they have been tricked into doing now becomes what you accuse everybody of doing, of being a part of that. Just like the Millers. You know, you've got these quacks out there, these people that do something evil. Well, clearly, American militias and all militia members are
that, yeah,
gun nuts, and that's why we got to take their guns away, because they're all crazy.
Right, right. You know, I'm gonna for the first time ever, I'm gonna share something on the air that I hadn't. And it kind of ties into the whole, you know, that even in Pittsburgh, in January of this year, the FBI conducted one of only two, from what I understand, active shooter drills at